sustainable hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong, the sustainable hour.
Good morning, listeners. We'd like to acknowledge that we're broadcasting from the land of the Wathaurong people. Excuse me while I find my voice. We'd like to acknowledge their elders, past, present, and those to come. We acknowledge the great work that they did in nurturing our land for millennia before a white man came along and stole their land. It was never ceded. And then finally, pay tribute to One Fire for the work they're doing in Geelong for reconciliation.
Good morning, Tony.
What a wonderful day.
Sunshine, blue sky, and very peaceful here in the studio for once. It's going to be a really nice show, I think, today, a very constructive one, where we're going to take a look at something local, something we've talked about for a long time, but haven't really had time to, because there's all these events happening. We're always out there describing this and that happening. Today, we'll be talking about, well, no surprise, climate change, but in a local perspective. What's happening here locally in the city of Geelong and in our region when we talk about climate change? We know that January this year was the driest January on record in our region. How is that affecting our community and things like that? One thing I find really encouraging, after we saw that the council declined to declare a climate emergency, wow, has the community stepped up. There's so much happening. These 200 people who were there in council and who left disappointed on the night when it was rejected to declare a climate emergency, they did not stop there. The campaign is moving on. Now people are talking about, you know, getting businesses on board. Sharon Bush has been out. She goes around with these posters. We have one of them here where it says, this business has declared a climate emergency. And she's encouraging businesses, local businesses here in town, to put that in their window after, of course, that they have actually declared a climate emergency.
Yep.
That opens up discussions about, now, what does that mean, and so on. But let's just hear Sharon, where she's describing why she did this.
We're approaching businesses in Geelong and asking each business individually to declare a climate emergency. The City Council's getting a little bit far behind, so we think as individuals and as businesses or anything, that we can all declare our own individual climate emergency, what things can be done in a business to help with, you know, the footprint of the planet and environment. And just getting the business community on board, who seem very receptive to the idea of putting up a sign saying they've declared a climate emergency.
So you actually designed this sign?
Yes.
So do you hope to see these in all the windows in the shops in town? Or?
Yes, that's the plan, to just get them out there in the public and, yes, just get more of the public informed on board. We've only got one planet, we've got to look after it, and that's really the purpose. You know, I've got children, and the future does look a little bit bleak if you watch news or you're looking online, and, you know, we all have to do something individually. We can't rely on governments. They're not really showing us a lot of attention on the climate emergency. They're happy to put their money into big business and coal and everything, but helping the environment. We had over 200 people at the City Council Climate Emergency Declaration. It wasn't successful. We wanted the council to do something. They're just using delaying tactics. You know, this is not working. Where summer's on its way, we are seeing rivers and wetlands just drying up and species extinction, and there's just so many things that need to be done, and the council isn't quite coming to the party to do something about it. And so the public are here to put some pressure on the council to do something. We can't all be about money and profit.
Said Sharon Bush, when we met her Saturday, where there was a meeting where the community really was coming together from all sorts of groups, and it was the biggest variety of groups that I have seen in the same room for years and years, if ever, actually, when I think about it. So the idea was to create a community alliance that all speak up for the climate emergency declaration. And what a powerful group of people there. And we don't know the name of this group yet, but there were three names suggested, and now there's a vote on that, I understand, with emails and so on. One of them was the Geelong Futures Alliance. Not a bad name.
Mm.
I think, you know, relating a little bit to Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Futures, which, by the way, still is going on here locally. People are meeting in front of the City Hall every Friday at 11 o'clock. So if you want to be part of the Fridays for Future movement, which has a local name here in Geelong, it's called Thrive for Future, then go to City Hall at 11 o'clock. What that is about, again, talking with the community, people just walking by and telling them about what's happening and, you know, really that we need to stop business as usual. Because that's really, speaking of business, that's what needs to happen, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And, it's business as unusual.
Yeah. I think, I know that Sharon didn't find it easy to do this, to this campaign, but she's pretty well got 100% strike rate so far when she goes in and talks to them about the sites. And people are happy to do that. They know that it makes difference to people. People make decisions based on whether they support it or not, in terms of whether they support them with their business or not. So,
and it's about changing the story, as I always have been saying. Yeah. And this definitely is changing the story in this city in an amazing way. I would never have expected that. Yeah. Actually, you know, we'll look back at this maybe in a few years' time and say, the best thing council could ever have done was to reject this declaration, because it has really brought people out from their homes and into action.
Yeah, there would have been 10 groups, I reckon, Mick, there the other day.
Oh, more. I think 20.
Okay. Yeah, and with a broad spectrum of environmental, coming from a whole lot of different directions, different perspectives on environment, but they all agreed on the
importance. It was religious groups, it was land care groups, it was groups that already have a conversation going with council. It was respected groups like Geelong Sustainability and many others.
Field naturalists.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was both sides of politics, you know, red and blue.
AYCC.
AYCC was there, yeah. So this is very, very encouraging. Now, if you are a business and you would like to declare a climate emergency, I just want to make sure that you know that there is a flyer that was produced in UK, a pamphlet, 20-page pamphlet, that actually gives you all the details of what it requires, what it means when a business declares a climate emergency. And there's all sorts of things happening in the UK that you can link up to and learn from. We talked with a company that hasn't declared a climate emergency yet, but they have become part of this B Corp, the B Corporation movement, which is a global movement that started in the US, and now it's going strong here in Australia as well. To become a B Corp certified business is not an easy journey, but it's about heading towards carbon neutrality, but also many other things. And that's the interesting part of what B Corp stands for. We talked with Lee Barnes, who's from Intrepid Travel.
Yeah, interesting man.
And I would just, you know, squeeze in here that we actually talked with him for about half an hour or so, and we have put that half an hour long interview out in this sort of extra podcast that I sometimes put out that I call the Regenerative Hour. So if you go to our podcast in your podcast player on your phone, or if you go to iTunes, you'll see there something that you don't hear on air on the FM waves, because it is only a podcast. And you'll be able to hear a much longer interview with Lee Barnes that we're just going to hear 3 minutes from now, an excerpt, where he talks about what it requires to become a B Corp corporation and where they're heading as a travel agency. And I think that's interesting because, you know, travel agencies, the first thing you think about is that they sell airplane tickets. And we know that airplanes
emissions, are very, emissions, emissions.
Very polluting. here's a story about how Intrepid Travel is tackling that.
It's really about making sure our product has a positive impact on the planet, has a positive impact on the communities, has a positive impact on our people. And we became a B Corp last year, and that's really helped guide us a lot around where we need to get better, what areas we need to focus on, how we can have a better impact in the community, all those sort of things. And B Corp really has probably professionalized and sharpened up a lot of our purpose initiatives over the last year. So I would, you know, if anyone's looking to about how they might do this for their organization, I'd have a look at the B Corp accreditation.
So B Corp, maybe you should explain to our listeners the idea behind the B Corp.
Yeah, so B Corp is essentially the idea that businesses can be used for a force. And it is a stamp and framework and an accreditation to say that your organisation is using your business as a force for good, that you are looking after your workers, that you are engaging with the environment in the right way, that you are doing what you can in your local community, that your governance is transparent and diverse, and really shows you're using your business as a force for good. It also is a very arduous accreditation process. It took us almost 3 years to go through a very rigorous audit process to check the things we were saying were correct, and we were using business as a force for good. And that broke down into all those capacities, how we treat our workers, how we engage with the planet, what's our governance like. And from that, we were able to say that we got a score. You need to score over 80 to become certified. We've achieved that. And that really is a stamp now that we can say that we use our business as a force for good.
Can I be the devil's advocate here? Because I'm often told, you know, I'm talking a lot about climate change, and then people say, but you're driving a petrol car. What a hypocrite are you? I have to then explain, well, you know, we can't do everything the same day, and I am going to go carbon neutral in the next 5 years, but you can't do everything. I'm thinking, when you say the word travel, the first thing I think about is airplanes and the pollution that the airplanes are making. Yep. How do you go about that question? You must have been asked that.
You've been asked for years. It's a good conversation. I think I agree with your point. You know, everything's about moving that needle forward to get better. You know, we're not getting everything right now, and we never will, and it's always about improving, seeing the problem and addressing it and continuing to be better. I think, you know, we've noticed it's been an issue since about 2010. Our founder, Daryl, saw the inconvenient truth and did the Al Gore training and really had a moment where he was like, hang on a second, you know, what are we doing? You know, travel is having an impact on the planet. Since that moment, we've become carbon neutral and we invest into environmental projects. We measure the carbon our business creates and we aim to put in place procedures to reduce that each year and then offset with credits. So we've been tackling that. That's been now since 2010. We've now set an initiative to be climate positive as of next year. So next year we'll be offsetting at 125%, but offsetting is only one part of the solution. We'll also be setting science-based targets to decarbon and set goals to decarbon our business. And that'll be both our office operations and also our trips. So we'll be setting those particular goals. We're also looking at where we invest our money. We've recently moved some of our deposits to green term deposits to ensure that we're supporting green energy builds and renewable energy projects. And we're also looking at innovation and research. We've just committed $100,000 to support research with the Antarctic Science Foundation over the next 5 years to see the effect that climate change is having on Antarctica, and also looking at innovative projects. We've recently done a crowdfunding campaign to build a kelp farm off the coast of Tasmania to help draw down and sequester carbon. So yes, it is an issue that we are part of, but we're doing everything we can to make our product have a better impact on the planet, and also looking at how we can make changes to our product to deliver that. So, yeah, good question, but our view is very much, yeah, it's an issue, and we're doing everything we can to address that and make our product better.
And good on you for doing that. Mm. That was Lee Barnes from Interpret Travel, and you can hear a half an hour interview with him on our podcast, The Regenerative Hour.
Yeah, the B Corporation's concept is really interesting, Mick, because it's not just about the business side of it, but it's about how they treat their workers as well and their supply chain. And it'd be a fascinating process to go through for a business, and they'll come out the other end as being carbon neutral or better, which is where we need to be.
It's about businesses taking a bit of responsibility for the world that we live in and what's happening and stepping up. And with this business has declared a climate emergency posters that you can now put in your shop window. That is a big step forward. I'm thinking, when will we see this poster up at the Chamber of Commerce and places like that? You know, the umbrella organizations for the business. Well, somebody, maybe Sharon, should knock on their door and ask. It's simply to move ahead, because climate change is here, hey? We're getting all these reports. I just saw on G21's website, where they write about sea level rise, it's predicted, and this is written on G21's website, and again, that's from a source that comes from the state government, which is that we will have more than half a meter of sea level rise in the next 50 years. And there will only be a quarter of our original vegetation remaining here in our bioregions in the next just 10 years.
Yeah.
So the biodiversity is going down, down, down at the moment. And that's what we're going to look into. We started this sort of citizen science project where we put a Facebook post up and said, anyone out there who's noticing changes? And we've been getting quite a few responses. People are sending in pictures to us of rivers that are drying up and flowers that are blooming at the wrong time of year and many other things like that. And in the studio, we have to say welcome to Zahida Milli.
Zahida Zaitoun Milli.
Who is also a colleague, because you are also a host here on The Pulse. Is that right?
Yes, I have an Arabic program every Tuesday night from 8 to 9.
And then we started talking. I met you here at The Pulse, and we started talking about your passion. Mm-hmm. Because and you should explain that, because it has to do with also where you came from before you came to Geelong, doesn't it?
Yes, I was living in the United Arab Emirates near Dubai, in a state called Umm Al Quwain, and I was living by the mangroves.
By the mangroves?
Yes. Mm. I'm a runner, a marathon runner, so I used to run by the mangroves and early morning on sand dunes, and I could spot what is going on, and I was scared, fascinated from the destruction a human can do to nature. Mm. I'm originally from Syria. And I saw the similarity in action. As Syrian, I was scared about my land in Syria, but I saw the same war in front of my house, yeah, which is considered a safe place. Yeah. Mm. And from there I started the campaign. Yeah. Painting. I used to kayak around. I lived actually in the United Arab Emirates for 17 years, but I couldn't find mangroves first because there's no media, no one talks about them. And I'm from the Mediterranean, so I never heard about mangroves until I was kayaking around and I found trees in the water, and I loved that. And it happened, it was during the time the war started in Syria in 2012, so painting the mangroves soothed me. So I kept going, kayaking and painting. And then I never thought to exhibit them, really. But as an artist, how could I help my fellow Syrians? I thought to exhibit at the National Museum in Ras Al Khaimah my sketches, and I put the sellings to Syrian refugees in Syria, like on the border to Jordan. That was a start, but also then when I moved to live by the mangroves, I thought, well, and people are not aware about the mangroves in general. I mean, United Arab Emirates is a multicultural, many different nationalities. Actually, local are only 20%. All of these people, everyone I met, they don't know what is mangroves. Mm. So I thought to go for an exhibition, started at the Project Space Gallery at New York University, Abu Dhabi, and the Abu Dhabi Environment Agency was our support, and the government in Abu Dhabi also supported us. So we toured with the exhibitions, just showing what is happening to the mangroves. And then in 2017, I ended the tour with a festival right by the mangroves, near my house. And it was a big festival. It was the first festival in the Gulf region. And we made art competition between schools and Wasit Wetland Reserve and the Ministry of Education and the ruler of Umm Al Quwain and his wife and Minister of Happiness and came along. So many supported the event back in 2017. And since then, I've been here since 2017 in Geelong.
And took a book with you. There was a book out.
Yes. It just shows the touring exhibition and the media we generated, like Arabic, English, French, and there's another catalog is about the artists who were with us. We had nearly 200 artists, really, singers, musicians, and even we connected with yoga and with rowing. We did a rowing competition. So we tried to connect sport with art and education.
With the environment.
Yeah, with the environment, right, by the mangroves. My aim was to protect that part in Emalcoin, because Emalcoin, I mean, not all the Emirates have not protected mangroves. Emalcoin, Ras Al Khaimah, the two poorest ones, you know, the rich ones like Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and no, they reserve the mangroves, but not Emalcoin. And all the campaign back there was to protect that part. I failed, but I did the festival.
Good on you for that.
But,
that's amazing.
Yeah, to build awareness.
And now you are bringing that inspiration here to Geelong.
Yes, to Geelong. Well, I came here in 2017. People are not aware of wetlands, importance of the wetlands and mangroves. I was a guest speaker in Lara for the Propos group. 100 people attended. None knew about how the mangroves are important. They were surprised from the information I gave them. I mean, I did PowerPoint presentation and I follow Ramsar. None knew about them. And for me as an artist, I see also, I'm trying to show, mangroves and wetlands are not just important, they are beautiful. I find heaven there. I mean, when I go kayaking and painting in the mangroves, I go alone. It's safe. It's beautiful. And through the exhibitions I did, I found like the art galleries, and they don't appreciate such a plant to be painted. Like, as an artist, I had a name back in the Middle East, and I used to sell my artwork, sculptures, and I'm a sculptor and a painter. I was selling well until I started with the mangroves. Very rarely to sell. It's this, or a galleries to like to exhibit mangroves. So it's something that for me, this pushed me to keep going for that, because I want to argue, well, mangrove trees are beautiful. They are. It's not just very important in our time. There's a beauty in their shape.
Yeah. You said, like, you had to leave Syria, and we all know how serious a situation that is. But you received, while being in the mangroves, you felt really calm.
Yes. And soothing, yes. Kayaking and painting. Yeah. It's a mystical and...
spiritual.
Yes, spiritual too. You feel you're connected to nature. And I was a guest speaker for that, encouraging people to go kayaking and painting. Whenever I exhibit, I do talk. But just to comment, no, I left Syria 20 years ago.
Okay.
More than 20 years ago. I left Syria when I was 20. I went to Lebanon, Beirut, to study art, where I met my husband, Australian husband. He was a student too there. So after we graduated, we moved to the Emirates because my husband had a job at Fujairah Australian University, started there.
So, okay.
That's why we moved to United Arab Emirates on a time I never heard about mangroves or wetlands.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm from the Mediterranean. My family town is close to Turkey and Cyprus. Larnaca, where I got married. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, that you gained from that calmness that drove you.
Oh, yes.
That drove you to keep doing the painting and keep talking to people about the value of the mangroves.
Well, I became passionate about them because I find them beautiful. And I really didn't know why there wasn't any media about the mangroves back in the UAE. It's always known there are palm trees and desert and skyscrapers and all stuff, but no one knew about wetlands.
No.
And I didn't.
But now the media, certainly in a sad way, were talking about it last week. The headline here from ABC, climate breakdown, : mangrove dieback along 1,000 kilometers of coastline.
Yes, I heard about that in Australia. Yes.
So that's up in the Northern Territory, where apparently the news is out now. And there's a video that ABC has put up. It's about 8-9 minutes long.
And it's about the mangrove die-off, the extinction. And it's a really, I thought, wow, finally here ABC are reporting something where you feel this is the hard truth coming from a public broadcaster. Good to see. Yeah. And thank you for that, ABC, but not good news.
Yeah, we get it from the traditional owner's perspective, and I think it's must viewing, really. And, we covered it at probably about a month ago when we talked about there was a survey. We interviewed a guy from CSIRO, I think, and they were conducting a survey into the ghost nets, the nets, that fishing nets that fall over from fishing boats. And at the same time, they were doing a survey on that, but they're also looking at the mangroves and the impact on them. A couple of years ago, there was the 1,000-kilometre dieback, and it seems like they haven't really recovered from that.
Mm. Well, actually, approximately 67% of global mangroves have been lost in the past century to coastal development, agriculture, pollution, and other human activities.
Yeah. So we've drained wetlands. Mm-hmm. And we've destroyed mangroves, and they're two of the lungs.
Yeah. Which is so silly at a time when we understand also the carbon aspect of that these wetlands are drawing down carbon from the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And we actually need them right now.
Yeah.
So what a silly situation. Hey, you brought some music. You said, if I'm coming to your studio, I'm going to bring some music, Arabic music.
Arabic music.
And let's hear one of the songs that you've taken with you, and let's cheer up a little bit from this climate breakdown discussion.
All right.
So the first song here is an environmental song, actually,
yes,
and they sing in different languages, not just in
Arabic. French, English.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
And the singer is Moroccan, from Morocco. The song is coming from Morocco. Yeah, actually, it's a contemporary one. It's a new one.
Now it's time to make a change. Together we can make this world a better place. All together, let's make it cleaner. Let's make it greener. Now it's time. واجبنا كلنا نحافظ عليها نقية لغيرنا لازم نخليها جيل ورا جيل مجموعين قدروا نردوا ليها together we can make this world a better place. Let's make it cleaner. Let's make it greener.
فيها الحياة جيل وراجيل نبداوي ونديروا ما علينا المناخ يكون كيف ما بغينا لا تغيرات تهدينا جيل وراجيل Nuestro planeta nos necesita dame la mano salva
ساقطوس أنا شكي الجنت مارس وذي سبوة ميروس أنا قفوس قفوس حيوانك سمنوس أنا شكي الجنت مارس أسيسا
At Artworks Geelong, our passion is art. We take pride in our collective knowledge of art products and love igniting your inner artist. Along with a retail and online store, Artworks offer a range of art classes. From beginners to professional artists, our classes facilitate learning through a wide range of resources, programs and services. For more information, visit artworksgeelong.com.au. That's Artworks with an X. Or visit us at 122 Ryrie Street, Geelong.
Station sponsor.
The Sustainable Hour.
For green, clean, sustainable Geelong. The Sustainable Hour.
Where we are in a bit of a sad discussion or looking at what's happening to mangroves that are dying all over the world, but also here locally mm-hmm. in Geelong. Let me hear a little bit more in detail. What's happening locally? So you've been out and looking at the wetlands here in our region.
Yes, yes. I go nearly every weekend to Lake Kunwari, Barwon Heads or Ocean Grove. Sometimes I go to Limeburners Bay here. I go kayaking. Last March, I was away overseas. And when I came back after 1 month, I saw a change in Lake Kunwari. I saw many, many dying mangrove trees, and I was really scared. So I contacted Mangrove Watch and some other organization, mangroves. I follow Ramsar also, and I had a reply. They said it's perhaps most probably it's related to high sea rise and related to global warming. Yes, because I saw like fungus on the trunk, and I send those photos to Mangrove Watch. I keep in contact with them as an observer, so I'm a volunteer to the mangroves. Mm. Yeah,
you are a citizen scientist, which is what we are encouraging people to do. You know, it's organized. There's a place to send in your observations and your photos and so on.
Yes, I run mangroves from the water social media on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and whatever I see, I post on them and hashtag mangrove watch, and they gave me their email address too, so to send clearer photos. Yeah, as an observer.
So that's really, I think, important that we begin to understand that climate change has already arrived. It's not something in the future. It's beginning to affect nature out there, around us.
Yes, well, it is sad. I was very sad. Last weekend when I went, thank goodness I didn't see a spread more of that. So hopefully it will be in one area. And I still hope maybe those trees are old and it's time to die. So we don't know. But yeah, we need to look after those trees, of course. I mean, mangrove forest contains some of the highest carbon-eating stocks for any forest type. In our land, salt marshes, seagrass, and mangroves, known as blue carbon ecosystems.
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll try. Through, I'm going to organize some of the activities I did in back in the UAE. I'm shifting it to here.
Okay. So what's that?
Yes, I'm organizing. I'm the curator for a coming exhibition next year, which is going to be on 26th of July 2020 at the Space Gallery Project Space Gallery at Deakin University Waterfront. 26th of July. It's the Mangroves Day.
Oh.
Which is announced on since 2015, declared as 26th of July
the mangroves
is Mangroves Day,
an annual global day.
Oh yes, international.
Okay.
Yes.
So how well fitting then that you can open on that day?
Yes, yeah. It worked. Yes, so we got the gallery for 1 month. Actually, they were really generous with us and free of charge, really. Mm. At the waterfront, and great. The ferry will start working from Geelong to Melbourne 2nd of December, so it's before our exhibition. Maybe we can bring Melbourne people to here too.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sure they
can just walk straight from the pier and then into the gallery.
And I mean, we are nearly confirmed 9 artists, but we're going to be 10 and perhaps more. Multimedia exhibition. We have international artists too to fit with the International Mangroves Day.
Yeah.
So we have 2 international artists, and we have 7 Western Victoria from West Victoria, and one from the Otways. Yeah, and also mixed Aboriginal, international, and the local.
What will the Aboriginal artist be showing? Is it?
Yeah, we're going. Actually, he's an amazing artist. He's spiritual, and this is what I love. Actually, it's a point. It's a very important point to have Aboriginal in our exhibition because it's a local plants, indigenous plants. For millennia, I mean, old mangroves. And when the European came to Australia, they didn't know about their importance. They demolished them. But Aboriginals, they knew their importance. So, yes, Richard, we're lucky to have Richard. He's going to be a storyteller with a short movie and a poet. He painted mangroves tree, dead mangrove tree, 20 years ago. And he told us a story. So there will be some stories. A story about, I can't remember his name, but who demolished many wetlands and mangroves in Australia.
It wasn't uncommon for it to happen.
Yes, so yeah. he was aware of that incident, and he painted mangrove tree. So it's an old painting. So he's going to
Is he from Geelong?
The Otways.
Otways, okay. Otways, we'll have to get him on, Mick. I think that sounds like it'd be really
He's an amazing, an amazing person. Yes.
Well, we do have time here now to warm up. It's not normal in this program that we talk about events that are half a year out there in the horizon, but that's great.
Yes.
Certainly there's something to look forward to.
Yes, actually to protect wetlands, you need to understand first, as I believe, the land from their original people or from the people who lived with the land, who understand the land.
And who put nature in center of anything that they did. You know, it's a different mindset that I think the Western world, we modern stressed people need to understand, because there's also some quality of life in that sort of worldview, where nature is the center of anything that we do.
Well, yeah, I think Zahida's testament before about how well she felt when she's there, like how calm, relaxed, and it's being in nature. And we just, so many of us have lost that.
Yes.
And you know, I guess that's a lot of the illness, the stress illnesses that we have are caused by that lack of contact with nature.
Oh, of course, and being surrounded with devices. Mm. Gosh, I mean, this is, of course, it's a main source of our complex life, complexity. Through my art, I always try to, my inspiration is mythology, Syrian mythology, which is, in a way, close to Greek mythology. We share the Mediterranean, but different names. And always nature was the source of mythology, you know. I mean, our goddess Astarte, her symbol was a tree, you know, and a tree used to be her symbol in a temple. And I can see the similarity with Aboriginal stories. Like,
absolutely.
How important is this spiritual connection between the land and the human being. This is very beautiful. And this is the source of any art project I go through. And this is the behind also the coming Mangroves from the Water exhibition. It will be from the Australian Aboriginal perspective. This is how I did back in the UAE. We went through storytelling, local storytelling, and from there we started the art project, either music, dancing, or visual art, or sculpture, or sport even.
They're always connected.
Sport, science, art, philosophy, poetry is all connected.
And you're aiming to get as many of those as you can for next in July next year.
Oh, of course, yes.
Okay. Yes. Now, so how do people, if this tickles their fancy, so to speak, how do they get in touch with you?
Through my social media or my name. You can just Google Zahida Zaitoun Milli, you'll find my contact.
I have
a blog for the mangroves, Mangroves from the Water, and I have a social media and website, Zahida Zaitoun Milli. Now we are 9 artists, but I'm searching for more Aboriginal artists, actually.
Terrific.
We have international, we have Western Australian, but we need now more Aboriginal art. Yeah.
And there's a blue carbon team at Deakin University. I'm sure this is something they'll be fascinated in, so we'll link you up with
them. Was your interview with Ollie and Zoe. We need them.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is amazing. This has really been a powerful presentation of your project. And we will do anything we can in the next 6 months to help you get the word out. And maybe have you back also to talk more about what's happening when we come closer.
Yes, closer to the exhibition. That would be great. At the moment, actually, if you don't mind, we need funding. We're searching for sponsorship. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get there, I'm sure.
We're happy to put the message out. We have a blog, we have a podcast and so on, so just bring it to us and we'll pass on the word.
Yes, and we need to invite also, there are some scientists, guest speakers, so it will be like an event at Deakin University to talk also about the importance of wetlands and mangroves. So that's why it's very important to have some funding.
Sahida, you brought another piece of music with you that I know is dear to you.
Oh, yes, Fairuz.
With an artist who is very famous in the Arabic world, but it may need an introduction because it's certainly not the kind of music we normally play in this program. Why do you think that we should play this song with Fairuz?
Fairuz, her song is very connected to the land, the beauty of the rock, the beauty of the water, the connection between of simple things we do in life, like you know. So it is related to the connection between land, nature, and a human being. So that's why I love Fairuz. And many Arab people love Fairuz. Actually, she's a singer. They request her, they put her song every morning with a coffee. Thank you.
Buying expensive honey can be too much to bear. Thankfully, Two Bears Beehive can rescue you from this sticky situation. Locally based, Two Bears Beehive can cater for all your beekeeping needs. With an extensive range of equipment, becoming your own beekeeper couldn't be easier. Beehive frames, smokers and other essentials are available, as well as their own tasty honey. Visit twobearshive.com.au to see their full range. Proudly sponsoring 94.7 The Pulse.
On the positive note of good events that are coming up here, at the end of the month, Thursday, the 31st of October, there's an event up in Hawthorne, which is Lighter Footprints organizing an event where three important speakers are going to come, but with a very interesting headline. I called the organizers and asked Carolyn Ingvarsson to explain why she's excited about this event. It's about the benefits of the future that we are heading with the low carbon economy and how we can transition faster and why we should actually do it. And the speakers are Tom Kompass, Peter Newman and Anthea Harris.
We've got people whose experience is with the IPCC level internationally, who work at right across the world. We have people who've been doing work on Australian economy and looking at the costs and benefits of climate action now, the costs and benefits right across the country, but particularly in Queensland and Victoria. And then we have a speaker whose work is specific to us, to Victoria, who can tell us precisely what's going on in this state. We are all at the moment frustrated, angry and depressed about the potential for Australia to be picking up action on climate and making progress. And so we tend to go into a bit of a funk. What we're trying to do here is to say there is another way to progress this, and our community needs to be well informed on what that looks like, and then we begin to take action. We can take action in ways that are positive. In truth, it's now the way to start thinking about climate change is to start saying it's the economy, stupid. It's about how we can progress from here in a way that provides good living. It's not about doom and gloom. We can, in fact, look at what's positive and we can progress it and we can show examples of what's happening. And we can emulate it. So we're excited about the possibility of how we're going to address climate change in the future.
So that's on the 31st of October, Thursday, organized by Lighter Footprints. And you'll find them, for instance, on Facebook if you look for Lighter Footprints.
Yeah, it Lighter Footprints do really good things, put on really good shows, are always well attended. So if people are possible to get there, they should.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And another big one coming, Tony, you know all about that because you talked with one of the activists in this, and I have the flyer here, this Blockade IMARC. What's that?
International Mining and Resources Conference in Melbourne next week. And the idea is to shut it down. Essentially, there's a lot of climate criminals that'll get together. So all the big movers and shakers in the mining world will be there and their funders. And the idea is that in times when we're facing a climate emergency, it's the last thing we shouldn't be attributed to these people because of the damage they're doing. It should be resisted. So there's going to be lots of people there just showing their displeasure at the products, at the fruits of their labours, essentially, which are killing people and have been for years. So, yeah, so let's have a listen to one of the organisers. And, if you can get along there, there's going to be lots of action next week, non-violent, direct action taken against the people that are causing so many of our problems.
Looking under the surface at any one of the companies, whether they're Australian or sort of international conglomerates attending the conference, these are companies that are just drenched in blood, you know. And these mines are atrocities, sites of atrocities all over the world. So that's kind of what inspired me to get really, really involved in this great activist alliance that's setting out to blockade this disgusting conference. It's one of those unique moments where I guess mining corporations and the people that run them affect the lives and well-being of so many different species, so many different people all over the world, that basically any issue you care about, anything that motivates you politically, will be somehow tied up with this kind of these activities of these corporations. So we have, for example, the group that has been actually running protests against IMARC conference consistently for the 5 or 6 years it's existed is LASNET, which is the Latin American Solidarity Network. And they, you know, to their credit, have been fighting these corporations for a long time, obviously because of the disgusting reality of what these mines are able to get away with in Latin American countries. We've jumped on board to try and help them with this. There's socialist groups like the Victorian Socialists have gotten involved. There's a whole bunch of animal rights activists concerned with, I guess, the extinction of species wrought by mining. There's indigenous groups from Australia and from Latin America. Obviously, those people are at the forefront most of the time at fighting back against these corporations. They're the ones that often their land, their people, their ability to maintain their lifestyle and their well-being is most directly affected by these mining companies. All sorts of different groups that come together and see that we do have like a collective interest, all of us, in stopping this conference from going ahead. We have high schoolers in there as well, agitating for all sorts of things, and that's really exciting. We also have a bit of an alliance with Extinction Rebellion activists that have been doing so much great work around the environment this year. So it feels like part of a greater movement. You know, this is just one action, one stepping stone along the way towards fighting for climate justice.
Yeah, and I guess it's pretty brazen for them, they're doing all this legally and with condoning of governments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess it's maybe about calling that out.
I think so, for sure. Like, one of the biggest things that we need to do in this situation, from my perspective, is to point out the complicity of the state of different governments in propping up mining corporations over and above the interests and well-being of the majority of human beings on the planet, and calling out the absolute hypocrisy of the state, in the sense that it claims to be all about law and order, but these multi-billion dollar corporations seem to, can exist outside of the law and above the law, whilst, the most vulnerable people on the planet and those who are out to defend them feel like the hand of the law coming down and upon them tenfold. And we really want to call out the hypocrisy of state governments and the media that claim that we are the violent ones. You know, when the kind of violence that they're complicit in, that they propagate every day all around the world, is, you know, 100,000 times more destructive and more horrific than anything that a protester blockading a convention centre could ever do. Yeah.
This was Emma Black talking. She's one of the organisers of this IMAC protest starting next week, and we put a full interview, like, is it 24 minutes or something like that, Tony, that you did, out on our webpage, which is climatesafety.info. We'll also make a link to it from our Facebook page. Just look for the Sustainable Hour in social media, basically, and you'll find this interview in the long version. We couldn't fit more in this program. An hour has gone once again very quickly.
Yes.
Thank you to Sahida for everything that you have shared with us. You have about 30 seconds if you have a last message you want to get out before we end.
Well, thank you for having me. I would say one can live in old philosophies, but the world can't be understood in any initiative way by sticking to the old principles. It's a quote by Luke Ferry, a philosopher, from his book Revolution of Love.
That is beautiful.
Good way to end the show.
You will have the last word, Sahida. Thank you so much for coming, and good luck with the work ahead, and certainly in half a year's time when your exhibition starts, and we will definitely follow you on that journey.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Go out there and
be the difference.
Be the difference. Be the difference. Be the difference. I know the world's gone mad. Be the difference.
Many people say that Sweden is just a small country and it doesn't matter what we do. But I've learned that you are never too small to make a difference. And if a few children can get headlines all over the world just by not going to school, then imagine what we could all do together if we really wanted to.
Be the difference. Darling, the future's watching us. So am I gonna open everything up? Am I gonna let fury fill my cup? Am I gonna be an anthem singing in the dark? Gonna light up like a burning heart? Am I gonna stand still as a rock while everything shakes and tumbles off? Am I gonna remember the truth? Cause I wanna be nasty, wanna be brave, not let his fear make me afraid. I don't wanna pretend I'm too small to jump the wall. I'm just trying to remember her voice, telling me that every day's a choice for where there's good, there's bad. And my child, you always can be the difference. I know the world's gone mad, it's true. Be the difference, be the difference. As I see it brighter long in you. So you gotta fight it, you gotta resist every day to
The most important development of the last 40 years worldwide is that women have understood we have a population problem and they have halved their fertility worldwide. They didn't ask men about this. They just got in there and did it. Women are the natural leaders of our planet in the 21st century. They have to lead in every single sphere. In politics, religion, business, women have to be up the top. Blokes are great at making war. You know, they're great at cutting down forests. You know, they're great at poisoning things. If you want someone to lead this planet, you need someone who thinks about the grandkids. And women tend to do that. So please put women in charge and we will have a sustainable civilization.